Well, do you want to bring a cake out for the 40,000? I mean, what do you want to discuss? I remember that
all those scores at an all-time high. That's great. I like that. backhanded compliment 101.
Welcome to Rogue Bros, a basketball series. Another week, myself, Andrew Bogut, and Mike Procopio, and some help from Trent along the way when we get in the NBL stuff. Pro, what's going on?
Not much, Bogues. I got nothing. Just watching games and just another Sunday in Dallas, Texas, my man.
Starts to get a little bit better now in the NBA season. March, April. March is usually a good season because teams are trying to get that seeding knuckled down. The West is super, super tight. So that's been good to watch. And then April, obviously, it can tone down a little bit with teams resting guys. But there's a lot going on. But we'll get into our team of the week. I'm going to go straight into it. The game just finished not long ago. The Boston Celtics have to get it. I mean, they're playing unbelievable basketball. They've won 11 straight now. They won their 11th straight versus Golden State by winning by, what did they win by, 50-something? 52. Just I checked the score at one point. It was 96 to 52 or something. I was like, what the hell's going on here? I thought that'd be – I'm glad because it was an early game in Australia. I think it was a early AM game. I'm glad I didn't get up to watch that, you know, with the kids before school, because I thought it'd be a really good game. Golden State's been in really good form. Boston's playing really well. I thought it'd be one of those things. But I think Boston had a point to prove from that championship year. They're not the same team. And one guy on that team, Pro, that's quietly playing very good basketball is Porzingis. He's having a very good year. He's 20 points, 7 rebounds, 1.8 blocks, and he's shooting 38 from three. So he's kind of the X factor, and we said that, I think both of us said that at the start of the season. If he stays healthy, which has probably been the one mark on his name in his career, if he stays healthy and he's healthy in that playoff run where you don't have to play Al Horford, you know, 30, high 20s, 30s, and you can put in a fresh Al Horford every now and then when need be, I mean, man, I like where they're at. I still, you know, the Embiid thing, if Embiid's healthy and they face Philly, will be a little bit tough for Horford. I think Horford plays more minutes there. That's a tough matchup for Porzingis, but he is quietly playing really well.
Bogues, this has all the makings of a championship team. You could just see sort of where it's going. You know, the ball moves. They play defense. They scrap. They shoot the ball. They go for each other. It's like at the beginning of the year, you could see it's like them and like four or five other teams that legitimately have a chance for a championship. I would say, you know, and I could be wrong, but I would say like them. I think they're not a shoo-in in the East, but I don't really see anyone really competing with them. You're right. Philly could give them a problem. I still think they're going to be better than Philly. And then I think obviously the Clippers in Denver. But they just like everything they're doing. I think this, like, again, we're a society of firsts. I guess I just read this during the Spurs game. They're the first team to win three times by 50 or more points in a season. I mean, they blow teams. They get their letdowns once in a while, but they just play they play within the system. They pull for each other. They got their all-stars in Tatum and Brown. They got guys like White, Holiday, Porzingis are all over the place. Their bench, which I thought would be more of an issue for them on a negative, has been playing well. Like, just sort of, you know, they just sort of play hard. They play for each other. And yeah, they've been fun to watch. I think they're going to be a tough out.
Yeah, and home court's going to be a play for them. They just do not lose at home. They're 29-3 at home. And we always talk about at least the last 5 years how teams have undervalued home court, especially with load management and resting. Teams kind of don't give a fuck really about our 4 or 5 seed who gives a shit will be okay. They value it. They want home court. It's quite clear they're going to get it throughout, and that's going to be hugely valuable for them throughout the playoffs, I believe. You know, that's a big, big difference. It's hard to win in that place, even when they're an average team. I mean, I remember going in there during that 18-game losing streak they had in, what was that, 08, 09, 010 region, somewhere after the KG and all that left. And it was still hard to win in there. They're on an 18-game. They actually beat us. We were the team they beat to get us.
I think that was 07.
Before they got them, yep. Mm-hmm. But point being, that's a tough place to play. They're a passionate crowd and they're good. So, yeah, they've been playing really well, and they're one of the fun teams to watch. So I think they'll definitely be. And look, I don't see anyone in the East. I brought up Philly. If Embiid's healthy, is probably the one outlier, just because they have a matchup that you know, Philly could kind of look towards to win quite easily. Although they, you know, Philly win that matchup against most teams, but they don't have a traditional big, strong, physical guy other than Al Horford, and he's older. But yeah, I don't think anyone really in the East can trouble Miami. The Miami Heat have matched up pretty well against him historically, but I just, their consistency when healthy is just not good for me. But yeah, moving on from that one, we go to the week. I mean, we spoke off air just before we went on. There wasn't, you know, every team's kind of doing what they're supposed to do, was something that you said, and that's true. But the golden rule for your weak team is whenever you get to double-digit losses, you get the gong, and that's the Washington Wizards, and they have lost 14 straight. They obviously fired their coach a little while ago. Jordan Poole's gone to the bench. It's just ugly. It's an ugly, ugly roster. It doesn't fit well. And they're, for that exact reason, 9-51 and not looking good. So I haven't watched too many of their games. I've ran into them a few times if I'm watching another team by accident and they happen to be playing the Wizards, but I don't circle any of their games on the calendar. They're a boring watch, and they generally lose in games. So they get my gong, pro.
Yeah, I mean, the guy that took over is Brian Keefe. It's a longtime friend of mine. And, you know, I mean, look, I guess he's a longtime assistant coach in the league, been in a bunch of places. And, you know, it's all, I guess, everybody's dream to take over a team, except if it's a team like this, I guess. They're just, like you said, there's no real direction yet. And, you know, they don't have that player that they could build around. They don't have that unbelievable rookie that they drafted. They don't have that unbelievable player that they acquired. They don't really have anything like that on their roster. Like Kyle Kuzma, you know, Kyle Kuzma is a good player. You know, everybody clowns on him for one reason or another. I think he's a solid player. He's like a solid third, fourth option in a team. But there's not really that, like when you take over, like when Sam Presti took over Seattle, you know, Oklahoma City, and they were really bad. But they had, you know, they had all those draft picks. They had Westbrook, Green, you know, Westbrook and Green, you know, Jeff Green and some of these young guys, and then they could live with that. They traded all their good players away, and they traded Ray Allen away. They traded Rashad Lewis away, but they had all these young players, and you could say they're going to be terrible, but at least we got Westbrook. At least we got Green. We got Durant in year two. You know, like these guys, there's just none of that right now. Like out of their whole 15, there's probably four or five you would actually keep, and all of those guys are just good role players. And there's really no, you know, there's no like, all right, we're terrible, but we got this. Like, I don't think you could say that on their whole roster. And the Jordan Poole thing has been a big time disaster. You know, Kuzma's been okay. You know, Tyus Jones is a solid player. Corey Kispert's good. And, you know, there's been a couple of guys, but man, it's a tough day. It's tough deal to go, you know, tough place to go to work, man. It really is. And, you know, but it is what it is. The NBA, no one cares, right?
Yeah, what are they like cap space wise? They got some space, right?
So from what I see, I could be wrong. Right now I have them at $137 million this year. They go to $113 in 24-25. So I think that's roughly $20 plus million they have to spend. And then, I mean, year three, they go to $90 million. So they will have money. I think the biggest, smoke and mirror deal in the NBA is being a bad team with cap space. I don't think anybody really wants to go there. You could sign a couple of players, but, you know, unless you're going to grossly overpay anyone, I don't think anyone's really rushing to go to Washington right now. But yeah, they'll have a little bit of space, but not anything crazy. You know, so they're looking at, you know, they're looking at like 25 plus million. So it'll be interesting.
Poole and Kuzma are the big money. Who else do they have? Oh, Bagley's rookie deal and Holmes. Yeah. Shamit's on 11 million. Jeez.
Yeah. Average salary. Avdija.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, Avdija is on 15 next year on that extension. So.
Oh, so that goes up because I don't have that on my sheet. So that will go up. That money 15, will go down. 15,
14, 13, 11. So, you know, he's on a fair bit as well. So, ouch for Washington. All right, moving on. I just want to go through strength of schedule, which is always interesting for the remaining part of the season, which could cause some differences in seeding, especially out west. Phoenix have the toughest strength of schedule in their remaining games in the league, which definitely makes things interesting because they are right now right in the middle of things, battling the seeding in the West, and the West is tight. It's super, super tight for those not familiar. Obviously, you've got OKC's first right now, Minnesota second. So Phoenix is in sixth, and they're only half a game out of seven, and they're only three full games out of 10. So that could play a part. Do we see Phoenix fall into that area? Who knows? You got Utah 2, Milwaukee 3, bro. So we'll see how Doc Rivers does. They are playing better basketball right now. Milwaukee's finally got a little, I think they've won 5 straight, I believe. 5 straight. So they're playing better basketball.
Yeah, 5 straight.
The diet of the Charlotte Hornets, 2 out of those 5 games, definitely helps their case. But they're definitely playing better basketball. But Phoenix, you know, and Milwaukee, you know, really tough schedules to finish out the season. Lakers are also there in 4. Now, they can't really fall out of the 10. Because the West now, there's a big drop off between the Lakers. It's 5.5 games to 11. So the ten is set out West. Obviously, to anyone that's gambling on things, you've got Brooklyn still a sneaky chance to maybe get into that 10. Trae Young is out, obviously having hand surgery, which is interesting, or finger surgery. He's going to be out at 4 to 6, so you don't see him back for the season at least unless they make the play-ins. So Brooklyn maybe could steal that spot. Easiest schedule, Boston is 28th strength of schedule, so they're going to continue to roll. Orlando, the easiest schedule in the league remaining, and Miami. So you could see Miami, you got 28 Boston, 29 Miami, 30 Orlando. You could see Miami making a little run here to get into that 6, which is a good thing. Golden State is in 24. They're pretty notable. Memphis, Houston, Brooklyn don't really matter. Philly, Embiid out, they're 22nd. So the rest are kind of in the middle, but always good to see who's got the type of schedules leading. So I think, you know, there's every chance that Phoenix maybe does fall into a play-in. Even though they are one of the better teams, they still are kind of inconsistent with the way things go. They're 6-4 in their last 10, constantly up and down with injuries with Beal and whatnot and Booker. So interesting to see how they go. But I see Miami making a surge into that. Well, they're in the 6 as of now, but they're tied with Orlando in 7. You know, maybe Philly fall out, maybe New York fall out. New York's had a bunch of injuries. They're not playing their best basketball over the last 10, 3-7. So maybe they fall out. There's a lot to happen out East for the close of the season, bro.
Yeah, I could see Miami really, you know, competing for that 4 spot, you know, just because it's 12.5 and, you know, about what, 13.5 and New York's 12.5. So I could see something going there. Dallas, you don't know what Dallas is going to do. They're only 1.5 games out of 5. New Orleans is playing decent. Phoenix, you don't know. I agree. There's a lot of movement that could be made. And then, you know, Orlando with the easiest schedule, I mean, they could flip-flop up from anywhere from 4 to 7, you know, so you really don't know. And then Indiana, you know, if they can get right back on sort of track, you know, Halliburton's been struggling a little bit, but, you know, they're sort of in limbo. What they can do, they can move up a little bit as well. So it'll be interesting. That straight to schedule stuff really comes into effect, especially down the stretch of the last 20-25 games of the season.
Yeah, and Indiana's pretty much slotted in 8 or better. They're 14.5, so 5.5 games ahead of 9, which is Chicago. So you don't see Chicago or Atlanta jumping up too far. They're going to battle for 9, 10, 11. You maybe see Toronto in there, but I doubt it. They're a fair ways behind. They're four games behind with about 25 odd games.
And Barnes is out too.
Yep. Yeah, Barnes is out. Yep. What did he do? He did a
fracture?
Fifth metatarsal fracture, sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Trent from the bullpen. I love it.
Yep. Barnes is out after that viral video of him talking to, who was he talking to? Was it Luka Doncic that I sent you, pro?
It was Giannis.
It was Giannis, yeah.
Yeah.
For those who haven't seen that, I don't know what language he was speaking, but neither did Giannis. it was a pretty interesting video that went viral from the All-Star game of Scottie Barnes trying to string together some English to Giannis, which is not his first language. He was looking at him like, I have no idea what you're saying. All right, Steve Kerr, 2 years, $35 million. This was an interesting one. I think he's done, you know, obviously a good job over the last decade for the Warriors. There are a lot of fans that have mixed reviews about this one, that wanted him gone, wanted him knifed. What I say to those fans, even if you absolutely despise Steve Kerr, who are you bringing in? Like, there's not a lot of there's not a lot of coaching talent out there just to replace a guy that's got you four championships, bro. But I think a good deal for Steve. It's a shorter term deal, so they're not selling the farm for 5 or 6 years. A really good number for Steve. I mean, although in California, it won't get you too far, but all good otherwise. How do you feel about that deal, bro?
Yeah, with that money in California, you can go from that Nissan to a Nissan Altima to a Tesla pretty quick, but that's about it. Hey, look, that's payback from what he's done in his career for them. I mean, you know, you're only as good as the talent that you have. So, like, there's no really saving graces coaches in this league. They don't really – it's a little bit overrated, in my opinion. It could take you over the hump from borderline championship to championship. But, you know, I really think that, look, he's done so much for that organization. I don't think he's – you know, he's not Red Auerbach by any stretch of the imagination. He had great talent. He put them together. He was a, you know, driving force for that team. But, look, from what he's done – and what the money that that team's making, I definitely think that that's fine. And look, I think that coincides with the years that Steph's got left in his deal, Bogues. Is that true?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. If you think that the Warriors made this decision without, you know, Steph and probably maybe even Draymond, you'd be crazy. So yeah, it definitely does float with that. At this point, with the players they have and Steph and Clay and Draymond, you want to keep familiarity, I think. I think the worst thing, my thing is, if you go coaching change now, you're basically blowing up the roster. Like, I would not bring in a new coach. You know, imagine they bring in a new coach that's a rah-rah and wants a new system, like Draymond, Clay, Steph. Like, it's just going to be like, hey, man, like, you know, what we've done's won. So the organization knows that. I think it's the right decision for another 2 years. It coincides with Steph's deal, keeps Draymond happy, keeps everyone happy, keeps it all kind of flowing. Maybe they make a few tweaks to that roster in the offseason if they can, and maybe they make another run. But look, they're playing good basketball right now. Is it reminiscent of the year they went to the finals against Boston? Not quite, but they are making a little bit of a push now. Bar that slip up today, albeit Wiggins out again for personal reasons, they're still a sneaky team that you wouldn't want to face coming out of the play-in. You know, if you're that, you know, that 3-4 seed, and then you got a two, three, right? Play the Plains. Is that right? Do I have that right?
What's up?
Who plays the Plains teams? Three and two, right?
One and two.
Yeah, I mean,
that's like, for you, 7 and 8. Sorry,
brain freeze. Look, I mean, honestly, if you're one or two and you're OKC or Minnesota, you probably don't want to face even Dallas. You're facing Dallas or Golden State coming out of that play-in, you're like, fuck, like, it's kind of and that's how deep the West is. So I like where Golden State is as of today, considering where they were a month or so ago. They made a great run and they're playing better basketball, but a good signing for Steve Kerr. I'll give him
I saw this with the Lakers with Kobe at the end of their run, when they had, you know, they still had Gasol, they still had Kobe. And they Phil stepped down and they put Mike Brown in there. And Mike Brown tried to change the system, change everything they were doing. They went from triangle to his system. And then, you know, he flailed out in a year. And then, you know, and then D'Antoni came in and they tried to have Gasol shoot threes. And, you know, it just doesn't work right. If you could have the guy that's been there the whole time where all your vets are comfortable around, I think you just keep him. I don't think there's any drama with it. If he still wants to coach and he's healthy enough with the back and stuff he's been dealing with over the years, like, if he's good to coach, I think those guys really trust him. You don't want to bring in another voice. I don't think anybody on that staff's good enough to coach the team if he would have left. So you would have to bring someone in from the outside. I think this is a total no-brainer. You know, 17.5. Hey, look, give it to him. He's you know, four championships. How do you not give it to him? So, yeah. I'm all for that.
100%. All right, LeBron hit 40K. Don't think into that too much, but they obviously lost the game. He was a little frustrated with that, but, I mean, 40,000 is 40,000, and it's looking like it's going to be a bit more than that with probably another year or two with him playing, but that's a definitely impressive feat, albeit, you know, scoring's at an all-time high, which will lead us into another conversation later on. But did you see LeBron's tweets around Bronny, pro? This one's an interesting one.
Well, hold on for a second. First of all, the guy scored 40,000 points. Let's spend a little more time on it than killing him about Bronny's thing. No, I don't think so. If 40 grand, hey, look, that was a great feat. But I did see the tweet about Bronny, and I saw the tweet that he did earlier in the year or so. But yeah. Go ahead, go right into it.
Well, do you want to bring a cake out for the 40,000? I mean, what do you want to discuss? I remember that one shot.
No, but it's funny. No, it's
glossed over it.
It's where media is today. Like 40,000, the actual basketball fee, we skip over it. And now we're going to go right into the Bronny thing. I respect it. Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying.
I just have just nowhere else to go. I mean, he scored 40,000. What do we say? It's like Kareem
all those scores at an all-time high. That's great. I like that. backhanded compliment 101.
No, not really. I've been a record in saying, you know, once he breaks a scoring record, you got to have him up there as, you know, I'm a huge MJ fan, but I was always, no way MJ's the GOAT. Now I'm kind of like a bit more open to the conversation, right? Like just because I think it's very impressive. And I think just his longevity is what's impressed me most about his career, the level that he plays at.
Dude, I'm just joking. I just think it's funny how we are today. You know, like Caitlin Clark breaks the record. Her college coach, instead of being like, look, I'm happy for Caitlin, blah, 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 just goes on the offensive about this is what they're saying about her, all the haters, this and that. But how about enjoying it instead of like going on the negative side and going on the offensive about and defensive about the stuff? How about just enjoying what they did and then moving on? No, it's got to be, you know, they say Pistol Pete did it in 3 years. This girl should have had it. Da da da. I'm like, can we enjoy fucking anything today? Nothing can be enjoyed.
So we should skip the Bronny tweets then? Is that what you're saying?
No, absolutely not. Let's get into it.
All right. So you rewind to March of 23, and this is when LeBron James said that Bronny definitely better than some of these cats I've been watching on League Pass today. Shit, lightweight, hilarious. So basically saying that he should be in the NBA as of today in March. Last week, can y'all please let the kid just be a kid and enjoy college basketball? The work and results will ultimately do the talking no matter what he decides to do. If y'all don't know, he doesn't care what a mock draft says. He just works. Earned, not given. Bit of bipolar there, in my opinion. I think I like the latter tweet. If the first one wasn't there, I'm more of that. Like, just do your work quietly. Everything will take care of itself. But you're the one that put pressure on your own son, bro. Like LeBron James, that tweet in March of 23 got 27 million views. You know, so is he a draft pick, bro?
In reality,
if you don't get LeBron.
Yeah, absolutely not. Absolutely not. He's like, we went into this with the McDonald's All America thing last year about how he wasn't even voted like first team all conference in his conference, and he was voted on the McDonald's game. So, you know, obviously it's privilege. It's you're entitled because of who your dad is. I get it. Don't get me wrong. He's a good player. He's a shooter, and that's really about it. But if you're not even first team all league in your conference, you know, in California, and you're a McDonald's All-American, and then like they're putting it out there that if a team drafts his son first round, with, you know, they'll get him, he wants to play with his son, blah blah blah, you know, it just fucks the whole thing up, to be honest with you. No, he's not a draft pick. He's not even a starter on a very below average Pac-12 team, and the Pac-12 is one of the worst conferences, major conferences in the country, and he can't even start on a team that's all fucking awful. So, you know, it's
I don't even know if he's an NBL player, bro. Like, I don't know if he's coming over here and playing big minutes, you know. And although I cannot wait for the NBL to start on the whole, we're going to bring him over as a next star. But yeah, I mean, it's just one of those things. All right, so Trent sent a little stat here. A player would need to average 24.4 points a game while playing 82 games a season for 20 seasons to score 40,000 points. So yeah, very, very impressive. Very, very impressive. And like I said, it just speaks to the longevity of it. You know, the guy's never hurt. Like, he never gets hurt. Now, there's rumors and conspiracies around that, and you can have those, but the guy is never the impact that he takes, he's got an elite elite kind of body as far as how strong and quick he is, and just does a phenomenal job of playing. You know, in the age of load management, I think that's where, from my opinion, most of credit should be given to LeBron, is just that he's there every night. He's there every night. You go to watch him play. He's rested a little bit the last couple of seasons of the Lakers every now and then, but for the most part, he's playing 60, 70 a night, even the last couple of seasons. So pretty impressive there. Jock Vaughn fired a day after our last podcast, replaced by Kevin Ollie. That's not too much of a shocker. Jock Vaughn reportedly pretty hard taskmaster, so he's out of there. NBA All-Star viewership, pro. Did you see the numbers for the last NBA All-Star game, Pro?
Since I haven't watched an All-Star game since like 04, probably not, but go ahead. I mean,
so $5.5 million. It beat last year's all-time low of the last 20 year. Well, I don't know if it's all-time, but last 20-year low. So 2023 was $4.6 million. But you look at the numbers historically, 2003, 10.8 million people watched the All-Star game, and it has literally plummeted about a million each year since then, or about half a million. The other all-time high in the last was 9.1 million in 2011. Ever since then, it's just been in a decline. So I think it goes to we don't have to get into it, what we've been talking about the last couple of years around that they need to do something, they need to fix it. We're clock back to other podcast listeners if you want to get into what our suggestions were, but the numbers don't lie, and I guarantee you those numbers are probably even fluffed with probably adding a few here and there, and there's probably a couple on in airports, like CNN's viewership and Fox News' viewership numbers get you know, they rise because it's just on in a fucking airport all day, like all the airports around the country. So, but yeah, the numbers don't lie there. Did you see the Isaiah Stewart thing, Pro? You know, the back tunnel punch?
The actual video? Because we did talk about it, right? On the last podcast.
Yeah, three games. That's it.
Oh, the suspension. Yeah, three games. Yeah.
What is that?
I don't know. No idea.
That's bad. Like that in my opinion, is like, you get a game for throwing a punch and missing someone in game. You've actually gone into a tunnel and bopped someone connected and got three games. I don't know. Is there more to the story? Was he baited? There's got to be more to the story that we don't
they
know.
They haven't released anything. I haven't seen the video. I haven't really, they didn't really go into if there's any bad blood, what it was about. I mean, you got to think that there's something because, you know, Isaiah Stewart, look, he's probably most notably known for, you know, wanting to decapitate LeBron James and have to be held back by 38 people. But like you don't know, like, I don't know what the backstory is. I don't know if Trent knows or whatnot.
There's nothing
I haven't
out
really
there.
Looked into it. But three games, like, to me, I'm always like, make an example so it doesn't happen again. Like, to me, I would have done 10 games minimum. Like, I would have really shown a message, set the message of, like, this is the NBA. Like, what are we doing? You can't be going after people like animals. It's just not, it's not good for business. But, yeah, I guess they said three games. And, you know, I don't know. Maybe it's because the Eubanks wasn't hurt when he did it. I have no idea. But I thought it was a little low as far as the number that he got. But, again, nothing really surprises me that much anymore.
I think it's really low. I think you know, you can't have this kind of stuff go on. That's why I think there's more to it that we don't know. You know, I hate to victim blame, but three games makes no sense. You know, those kind of things can really go astray in a back tunnel of an NBA arena if other players get involved and personnel and coaches. You just don't want to okay that. I think, you know, a 10-gamer should have been probably more on par with what I would have thought would have happened. Because I know the NBA, you know, stamps down on stuff off the court heavily, and I think they missed the boat on this one. But yeah, just a head scratcher. I think there's more to it in that story. The NBA competition committee has begun reviewing whether the game has been too advantageous for offense. Where the fuck have they been? I mean, it's like teams are scoring 150 points a game. Like Indiana's like, I look at their game sometimes, and it's the third quarter, it's like 120 to 105. I'm just like, what? There's a whole other quarter left? Which leads us to an interesting discussion, Pro. I want you to give me, I'll give you mine first if you want, so you can think about it. What's one rule change you would make or bring back for the defense to be, you know, to help the defense and not be advantageous to offense? For me, I would bring back a hand check arm bar when facing. So basically, you know, I drive the ball, defender's guarding me, he's allowed to have a non-extended arm bar. So just a normal arm bar to kind of hold me up a little bit within reason. It was like that when I first got in the league and they really tweaked it. I think that's a okay one, in my opinion, for that. And then I would just bring back I'll do two. My other one would be I don't think the flop warning does enough in the NBA. I think I'd bring back the FIBA rule that, you know, automatic tech for any flop or flail. Basically any dramatization, soccer-esque movement in basketball where you're, you know, you're trying to initiate the contact. Like, I'm sick of seeing guys drive with their head down and run into the defense and then flail. I'll just call that a flop straight away. Get the tech over with, go shoot a free throw. I guarantee you within one day's or 2 days slate of games in the NBA, players will adjust immediately. So they're my two big things that I would stop trying to fool the officials and I'd allow armbar. What do you got?
Folks, the thing is, like, they allow, and I don't even know if it's legal or not, but I watch enough of these games, like, they allow the armbar if it's, and I don't even know if it's, like I said, I don't know if it's illegal or not, but most players that guard the ball that's guarding a drive have the armbar, but it's not extended, have the armbar that's connected to their body that's holding the player. Now, they still call that impeding progress, and they call it about half the time. But that I would definitely, I mean, I do agree with that. There's got to be some type of non-blatant hand check that you could call or not call that will give the defense some advantage. That's definitely one. I would probably try to get rid of illegal defense too. I would let them sag in the lane a little bit more. Don't spread it out as much where you have to play and, you know, defensive 3 seconds. I don't know. I'm not a genius with these rules, but, you know, there's got to be something else that will give the defense a little bit more of an advantage, you know, where there's no foul, you know, where the foul calls and things. But
well, the D3 won't change much, will it? Because they will just hoist even more threes if you've got to go on the split line, you know. I don't mind that one. There was the tipping it off the rim, like in FIBA. So as soon as it hits the rim, the ball's live. What else do we have? There were a few other ones I read. But, yeah, I mean, like it's – they got to do something. I think it's the pendulum. I spoke about this last week. I did a speaking gig for a brand I work with, and that was a question that was asked about, is it too high scoring? I felt like in the late 90s, early 2000s, mid 2000s, it was too grindy. You know, the Pistons were beating teams. Like if the Pistons scored 80, they beat you. Like it was the bad boy, not the bad boy, the Wallace era and Rip and Tayshaun. And that was too hard to watch, but I like that because it valued possessions as a game, but it was probably too much to that side of hold and grab running in mud. Now I think that they've tried to swing it to make it more free-flowing. The pendulum swung the other way. Now it's just like, you know, just too much scoring. And I think there is such a thing, I think, for basketball purists. But the question is, do your general casual fans like that more?
There's the thing. Like, the style of play is brutal in the most part, right? The only thing you got really going for you in the NBA besides the individual player is the offense, is a, you know, the spectacular offensive, you know, offensive output. You take that away with the same type of style of jacking up threes and doing all this other stuff and 98 dribbles into a step back. Like, then you take away all the offense and the offense goes away a little bit, not necessarily like it was in the 80s or 90s. In that era of basketball with Detroit and that, but I think there's definitely some rules you could tweak that'll take the scoring down a little bit. But with all the 3-point shooting, you know, that has a lot to do with it too. Like there's everything's 3-point and rim. That's the most valuable shots in the game. Two most valuable shots in the game. There's a million foul calls. That's another valuable shot. You know, they get rid of mid-range.
Free throws generally a game, right? On average, or it's like 45, 50 when you combine both teams. Yeah. Would you consider lifting the bonus to 8?
So lifting the bonus to 8 instead of 5. Was it 5 now?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That I would do as well. I would do that as well.
Just I think the free throws definitely kill me. Like there's a lot. And
there's a million foul calls.
There's a million foul calls. So it definitely does affect the game. Yeah. There were people that said, do we lift? I read one saying lifting personal fouls to 7 or 8. I wouldn't do that. I think 6 is fair. But maybe the bonus lifts and you throw it. It'd be interesting to see what they come up with to try and tweak it. But I definitely think it is more advantageous towards offense. And offense sells tickets. Let's not lie. But it's the pendulum's just swung. I think, you know, games in the 110s, you know, early hundreds for me are my sweet spot because I think the possessions are much more valued, especially late in games. Once you start going to 140s, 150s, it's just a shit show, in my opinion. So, but everyone has a different aspect of it. I know casual fans love the high scoring and the numbers. And
I think you got to let them play a little bit more physically you know, and be more consistent. Look, we always talk about consistency with officiating, and it always goes up and down. Like at beginning of the year, they're all over it, and then it just goes back to the old stuff by halfway through the year anyway. But I think if you can limit the free throws and let them play a lot more, you know, a little bit more physically, you know, without the foul calls, the holding a little bit, let there be a little bit more contact, a little bit more physicality, a little bit more hand checking and holding.
Playoff refereeing.
Yeah. Like,
right?
Yeah. That's what I think. I think that that's a big part of it.
Question for you. Do you think anyone will hit 150 in the playoffs? I don't. See, I think like that's regular season shit. I think one with that style of refereeing we just spoke about, more physicality and all that, I don't think anyone hits 150. Unless it's one of those ones where it's like a blatant blowout and benches are cleared. But in a close game, yeah. Are you having an Indiana-type game in the playoffs where it's 150 to 145? Like,
Do you think Indiana could do it one time?
I mean, they
in
can
the
do
play-in?
I don't know. I just think I think defense is so much more locked in. I think it's so much more locked in once those games are nut-cutting games. You know, I'd even argue, will someone hit 140? So what do you think? You think someone will hit 150 in the playoffs?
I don't. I think like you know, playoff basketball is a lot different than the regular season, and people play you differently. They, you know, the game's officiated differently. The energy's different. Everything's a different feel when you get to the playoffs.
I agree. So that's what the kind of I know you can't have those kind of games regular season because of the physicality and everything. And they say if you have those games early, you're gonna have so many injuries, but I think a bit of a tweak in the refereeing as well would help. All right, Aussies of the week. Dante Exum's back from injury finally. Hasn't played a lot, limited minutes, but 3 points, 1.5 rebounds, 2 assists per game. Dyson Daniels still out, hurt, obviously. Josh Green, 7.3 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists, 1.5 steals, 8 for 19 from three. So he's put together another solid week post All-Star. Joe Ingles, 3.6 points, 1 rebound, 2.2 assists, 5 for 12 from 3. Jock Landau back in the rotation, about 8 minutes per game. He's at 2 points, 2 rebounds, so he's played a fair bit post-All-Star break, especially against Phoenix, his former team. They played him twice in a week, and he played both of those games. Patty Mills has been waived. Championship buyout market, maybe pro of you. I don't know if you've heard anything about where he could be headed. But not much out there in the cycles. Usually when a guy's way like this, the agent will start leaking. You know, they've got a list of 5 teams that they're talking to. Usually it's playoff contenders. There hasn't really been much out there, which does beg concern for the Olympics and leading into, you know, a big Olympic campaign in 24. You want one of your better players at least getting some burn on the court. But have you heard anything as far as where he might end up?
I have not. I there's really not a – I mean – I don't see a lot of teams right now, you know, maybe they bulk up and get size, or maybe they have a guard that's fresh and a little younger, but nah, I haven't really heard anything.
Yeah, it's ever really a guard for those buyout spots, right? It's like you said, it's usually a team trying to stack up to maybe get a body for Embiid or Jokic or maybe a wing to guard a Durant. It's ever really a smaller guard. And it's interesting they'd make this move with Trae Young being out. So I'd assume Patty's people have gone to Atlanta and said, I'm at the end of my tether here, release me, I want out. And they've obviously released him, but you would have thought there'd be some minutes available this next 4 weeks, 4 to 6 weeks with Trae Young being out. Matisse Thybulle, pretty good week for him. 5 points, 2.8 rebounds, 1.6 assists, 3.4 steals a game, pro. He's 17 steals in the last 5 games. So that's where he makes his money, and he's doing a great job defensively for Portland, but they obviously suck. But, you know, I think he could be a valuable piece that someone makes a move for in the offseason that can maybe bolster a championship team. The problem is he's on a decent salary, whether you do that or not. Josh Giddey, he's probably in his worst form in the last couple of years. He's at 8.4 points, 6 rebounds, 3.2 assists, 3 for 11 from 3. Not a great week for him by his standards. The minutes have definitely become lesser. And, you know, after all the form of the last couple of seasons, it's definitely been an up and down season for him with an extension looming, pro. So you just don't know what direction that's going to go. You know, Wallace has now started to play a whole lot more as well. And it'll be interesting to see what OKC do in the off season with him, but definitely not a great week there. And Ben Simmons, not a great week neither. Probably the worst week of his career. 3.3 points, 6 rebounds, 2.6 assists, and has been he's injured again with an undisclosed left leg issue. So just cannot get a good run with injury there. He was in kind of pretty teary eyed on his post game press conference after the latest injury. So whatever that's worth, but I don't think we'll see him in a Boomers jersey again. Boomer fans, that's just my opinion. I think he's had another pretty tough season mentally and physically, and I think he'll be looking at, you know, do other things and rehab and get better that way. I don't think he'll be part of the national team. And finally, Duop Reith, 9 points, 4.2 rebounds, 1.2 blocks, 4 for 18 from 3 in that span, but a really solid week for Duop. He started most of those games with 8 and out. And he's going to get the player of the week. He was the best performer at 9 points. Was that him and Josh Green, I believe. Josh Giddey was in there as well. But we're going to give it to Duop Reith. So he's at 2 now for the year. Josh still runs a Roos Pro, your pick, that was going to run the board. He's at 3. Who else do we have? Josh Green's at 1. Dante Exum's at 2. Dyson Daniels at 1. So a couple of weeks left in the season. A couple more of these left, bro. Can someone catch up to Josh Giddey?
I don't know. I mean, I don't think so, Bogues. I think it's a lock. Maybe Exum, but
he's cracked the rotation. Like Giddey,
Giddey will probably take it. Yeah, Giddey's. It's interesting over there because they got, you know, they got Shea dominating the ball, and then you got Chet dominating the ball, and he's not shooting it well. So they're using him more as like an off the ball two god, coming off handoffs, transition, cutting, and things like that. It just, I think he's just is struggling with it because he's just not shooting it. And I would think his assist numbers would be way higher than 3 if he actually had the ball in his hand more. But look, Shea's a MVP candidate, so of course he's gonna have the ball in his hand. So it's just a tough dynamic. It's a different type of dynamic they have, and I think with him struggling shooting the ball, it's sometimes it's going to be tougher. Not that he's a total non-shooter or anything, but it's just going to be tough to really consistently have him, you know, down the stretch in games, in game. So probably have to be something that he has to work on a little bit in the offseason, in my opinion, and continue to work. They got the best shooting coach in the world, you know, right now with Chip England working with them, and hopefully they can make some more strides in the offseason. But yeah, definitely a different type of energy in year for him than he did like in years past.
Yeah, and it seems like the conversation has shifted. It was an automatic max extension, I think, a year or so ago. To who knows where that goes now? Do they get him at a smaller number? Does he, you know, is he disgruntled because of that? That's going to be interesting as well. The way OKC play it, because they have a few other people they might want to pay as well coming up. So. See how that goes. All right, stats, useful or useless? Pro, here's one for you. The Blazers' local viewership dropped 60% compared to last year.
That's useless. The way their team's playing, they should be dropped 85%. So, yeah, I think it's useless.
But they weren't that good last season neither. But why this one was a good one is I think it shows how valuable a star player is to a small market. You know, we always talk about these teams that stack super teams and go together in big markets. You know, sometimes these small markets, although they're not that good with that star player, you need a face in these small markets. You can't just have a team that's kind of faceless right now as far as, you know, Simons is obviously growing into that and a few other players, but you need a star. So I think it's useful to show us that if you're that small market, you need a Giannis. You need a Morka needs a Giannis. Blazers need a Dame Lillard, those kind of guys to have people, you know, be interested in it. And Dame was Dame is and was a national star as well, you know, from a small market. So I think you definitely need that. This here's an interesting one for you. Tyrese Haliburton, we spoke about him numerous times. Here's his numbers pre-injury, January 8th. 24 points a game, 4.3 rebounds, 12.7 assists, 40% from 3. Post that injury on January 8th, pro, 14 points a night, 2.7 rebounds, 8.6 assists, and 34% from 3. So it looks like that injury really messed with his rhythm over the last month and a half. You know, he was arguably, he was in top 10 for MVP consideration, almost scraping top 5, balling. You know, we spoke about 20 assist games with zero turnovers. He was putting together some crazy numbers, although backhanded compliment again, pro, although inflated a little bit because they score 150 points a game. But yeah, man, this just goes to show you. And I'm on a smaller sample size, nowhere near the star power of Halliburton, I've dealt with similar stuff where you have good form, you're playing well, and then you get some sort of fucking injury that puts you out for, it can even be for 7 days or 10 days or 14 days, and then you come back and you struggle to get back that form. And I mean, this one for Halliburton seems to have cost him a little bit form-wise. Useful, useless?
It's definitely useful. He's definitely type of player, Bogues, that needs to be comfortable. You know, he needs like everything flowing, right? I think it's tough, like when you deal with an injury like that, that puts you out for a while, not only your rhythm, but your conditioning. You know, he's probably feeling some pain, if I had a guess. I don't know this for fact at all, but like he's probably not feeling good with it. And it's not 100%. It's a little weak and he's trying to play himself into it, but it definitely has impact and effect on him. So I think that that's something that, you know, definitely impact him. I think it has impact on his game. It has an impact on the mental. He's definitely playing a different, you know, it's just different. And just watching him, I watched a ton of tape on him in the last 2 or 3 days. And, you know, you could tell he's just a little different. I mean, he was scoreless the other night, 0-7 at New Orleans. You know, it's, imagine a guy like that who's in the MVP. I haven't seen that in a long time, where a guy that was in the MVP consideration go scoreless in a game, and
just a drop off,
you know, within a month and a half. Yeah, I mean, look, everybody could have a bad game, a terrible night, but it's just an interesting deal, and that team needs him. I mean, Siakam's a good player, don't get me wrong, and it's a good pickup, but if Halliburton's not rolling,
oh no, they're not going nowhere. They might even, I mean, they're not going nowhere without him.
Nembhard, Naismith. You know, all those guys are like spot up shooters, straight line drivers, you know, guys like that. Turner's a decent player, but if you don't have that guy in that system, it doesn't go. And, you know, and hey, look, he's had a phenomenal, like they've been a team year in and year out that nobody wants to really go to in free agency. Now they're talking about like Paul George wanting to team up. You know, I'm not saying it's going to be true, but they do have a potential chance to sign a pretty big player in the offseason because of the way they play. They've got Halliburton there. They've got Halliburton and Siakam, and they got some guys. They got some cap room. But from what he's done, he's really changed the whole trajectory of that franchise. And I don't think anybody, when they made that trade, would have said that this guy is going to do anything close to this. I think everyone thought he was a good player, you know, but being a franchise player and a difference maker and an all-star starter and all of that, I think that that's a hell of a deal. And, you know, I'm sure he'll get back to form, but if he's not feeling well, and then you get these games, like everybody's playing back, you know, every other night, then they go back to back. You don't have that much time off, and you played a ton of minutes already. It'll be interesting the way, if he could find that form by the end of the year.
Yeah, I agree. You want to try to find it now, that's for sure. But they're fighting for, you know, they're fighting for a decent playing spot now. So just really interesting what the injury's done to his form. We were speaking about off air about Jaylen Brown and his left hand, but this is an interesting one that popped up in an interview. Online, Boris Diaw claims he never scored a bucket with his left hand his whole NBA career. I just did some Googling, and of course you go straight to Reddit for this kind of shit because you get all the people that are on all kinds of meds that just deep dive on all this kind of shit. And they found one, and it was a tip-in. And I think Boris mentioned that. He goes, I think I might have had a tip-in with my left hand. But people trolled a bunch of film, highlights, YouTube, this, that, could not find one basket where he'll literally go left with a wide open layup, and he would turn into a right hand flip, and it's just amazing because he was one of those guys. Him, Al Jefferson, all those guys at the scouting report was like, he's gonna do whatever he can to get to his right hand, and you knew it, and he'd still get to it, and you were like, he was just so crafty with all these cheeky ways to get to it. But I thought it was an interesting one just to discuss that you can be a professional athlete and basically you're hindered. 50% of your game is hindered because you just won't use that side of your body, and you still were pretty successful. And he, in his prime, he was a very good player, high basketball IQ, knew how to play the game, triple-double guy in his prime. But yeah, just an interesting one for you, bro.
Yeah, I mean, I'm probably the biggest advocate on the planet for developing your left hand and studying it. And like Al Jefferson, we drafted him when I was in Boston. Al Jefferson will take you on that right block, back you down middle to the left hand, and he would literally turn like to shoot the hook with the left and shoot it with his right hand. Like that's how bad his, like he didn't want to go to his left hand. Ironically enough, Tim Duncan never liked to use his left hand. If you watch Tim Duncan on that right block, a lot of times, I would say almost half the time,
fadeaway bank shot. Yeah.
If he goes middle with a hook, he does the Al Jefferson shooting it with the right hand. And it's normal for righties to either shoot with two hands going on the left side, like for a lefty shot, instead of like that just like pure left-handed shot, they'll shoot with two hands, or they'll just use the inside hand, they'll use the right hand. But it's interesting he said that. And, you know, at first I thought, was there a deformity? You know, I remember scouting him my first year scouting in Boston. I was the overseas guy, and he played for Pau Orthez. He played with Mikel Pietrus in Pau Orthez in France, and he was a skilled player, man. And Atlanta drafted him, and you know, he went to Phoenix and then a couple other places. But man, I never even noticed Bogues. Like I remember hearing what he said, you know, a week or two ago about the left hand deal. But that's interesting, and it's unbelievable that they would actually like scour film on, imagine like wasting your day scouting film on Boris Diaw from 8 years ago to see if he used his left hand in like Philadelphia on a cold February after February.
You obviously haven't been on Reddit very much, bro, have you?
No.
You obviously haven't seen what kind of people frequent that Reddit. Like these guys will deep dive anything, like how tires are made in India or some shit. Like someone will put a post or a topic discussion, and there'll be, you know, 50 people debating on how they're going to research it. So it is cool. But yeah, it's one of those forums that there's a lot of people sitting in basements in their underwear, just with a lot of time on their hands. Next one, total blocks in February. Pro, you sent me this one, I believe. Wembanyama has 38 total blocks for February. The Clippers have 36. The Bulls have 36. The Blazers 30, and the Heat 26. So he has more than all those teams' complete rosters have blocking shots. I mean, he's going to cause a lot of problems in this league over the course of his career. And by the way, his matchups with Chet already have some fire. They don't like each other. They played each other in the World Junior Championships. There was a battle there. It's not nowhere near there yet. A Magic Bird. You know, that's, it feels like one of those that has a history pre-NBA. You don't get those very often these days because of all the different paths to come to the NBA. You can go college, high school, AAU, NBL, Europe. I mean, there's not really a lot of rivalries that come from juniors. This looks like a genuine I hate you motherfucker. And they played the other night, and Wemby got the best of him, and there was some shit talk and some physicality. He got the best of Chet that night, and I'm looking forward to that battle. And they're both in the same conference, so we'll see him 3 to 4 times a year. But Wemby's not only that; he usually has 3 or 4 steals a game just by accident, like you know, because guys will just throw a routine bounce pass that works 28 games out of 29, and they face the Spurs, and this dude just accidentally gets a finger tip on it because of his wingspan. But amazing guy to watch, and just how graceful he moves with kind of how long he is has been fun to watch so far, bro. But the block shot thing's pretty crazy.
Bogues, I got Trey Jones as a client, so I got to watch every one of their games, and he's one of the more remarkable shot blockers I've ever seen. Although it is hard to watch their game sometimes because the guys who do the telecast, I mean, everything he does is the best that they've ever seen in the game, blah, blah, blah. So it is a little bit tough for me to watch. But I will say this. I thought Manute Bol and Nerlens Noel were probably two of the more talented shot blockers that I've seen at a young age. Manute was never young, but, you know, this kid, he just... anything, like he'll chase down blocks, weak side, he'll just guard you and block, he'll come out of nowhere. I mean, he'll in pick and roll, he just I mean, the shot blocking is remarkable what he does. And like, you weren't too far off, Bogues. Like, you know, they're obviously saying Gobert, but I'm telling you, like, defensive player, if they name this kid player, defensive player of the year, I wouldn't bat an eyelash at it. I mean, he is one of the toughest guys in the league to score against in the post. I mean, at the rim, and he's remarkable at what he does. And
I think the wins will cost him. I think if they were playing, scratching a plane, he'd be very close to getting it. I think their record's going to kill him for that award. But I just base it on because he just accidentally blocks shots and gets steals because he's so long. He just and you can see teams just don't want to go on the paint when he's floating around the paint. They do not. Mm-hmm. They Steve Nash dribble the shit out of that, meaning that they get to near the basket and they dribble out the other side on the baseline and kick it back out because you can't even get a floater over him. And it's just his ability to be able to recover from a bad defensive play himself or a teammate. Where there was a play the other night where he recovered from the free throw line to get a block shot at the rim with like two steps, you know, and it's just, it's amazing. It's amazing to watch, and it's a beautiful thing to watch. So now, Pro, there is only four teams in NBA history that have never had a player block more than 10 shots whilst on their roster. But you won't get these four.
Wait a minute. There's been four teams that haven't had a guy that's blocked 10 shots in the game?
10 or more shots, yeah.
All right, give me a second. Let me just look at the teams here. All right.
Three West, one East.
Three West, one East. All right, give me a second. No. I'm going to go, let's go newer. So let's go New Orleans Pelicans.
Nope. Anthony Davis was there, remember?
Ah, yeah, you're right. Oklahoma City? No, they had Ibaka.
Answer your question.
Fuck. I mean, Utah Jazz had Mark Eaton, there's no doubt. San Antonio, forget it. All right, I'm just going to throw teams out there then. Golden State?
Nope. Manute Bol.
Jeez. Yeah, Manute Bol. Denver had Mutombo. Dallas had Sean Bradley.
Dallas had Sean Bradley, you're right.
Yeah, the Clippers?
No, the Clippers are in there. Who the Clippers got?
Shit, I've named every fucking team in the West. Portland?
Nope. Clippers had
Clippers
had Benoit Benjamin in 1989. All right, so
Benoit Benjamin?
Yeah, he had 10 blocks in 1989. All right, Boston Celtics?
I could see that. Wow.
Six,
Bill Russell never blocked 10 shots?
He's 6'6", though. Not blocking shots. Not blocking 10. No,
Bill Russell wasn't a good shot blocker.
I'm just giving you a shit, but he just couldn't get to that 10. He was too small. Sacramento Kings? Yeah, Vlade. Yeah, blocking shit.
Yeah, Vlade ain't blocking shit.
Minnesota Timberwolves. Christian. Maybe that changes this season. But Minnesota Timberwolves don't have a 10-plus block.
Yeah, okay.
And the Memphis Grizzlies have not. I thought you would have got them because they're a relatively new team,
Pau
right?
Gasol, yeah, Pau Gasol wasn't trying to get blocks.
Yeah. So, but maybe he wasn't with Vancouver. He was Memphis, right? That's the block shots. Okay, we're going to move into some NBL Pro. As you know, the top three is set. Trent, if you want to chime in on this, feel free. But we have the play-in from last week, which was the Kings versus New Zealand. Kings are out. We'll get into that in a second. Illawarra played Tasmania. Tasmania won that. So now they go to play Perth in a three-game semifinal series. Melbourne will play the winner of Illawarra and New Zealand, which is tonight Australian time. So at time of recording, it'll be tonight our time. Who you got on that, Trent? Who you got winning this game tonight?
If New Zealand can pack the paint and kind of make it tough for Illawarra, like they're very dependent on their guards like Clark, Harvey. So like if they can kind of make a shootout and Illawarra doesn't kind of play how they, you know, have been playing, I think it's very tough for them to get buckets. And like Tasmania made that pretty apparent. Obviously it's hard to go down to my state and like get a win down there, but I think like they've kind of given New Zealand the blueprint of like, okay, like if you guys get these guys hooking up threes and then their offense kind of just falls apart pretty quickly and then they're not a very like super strong defensive team. I know they've had stretches where they've looked really good, but against Tassie they looked terrible. So yeah, I think if they can get him shooting a lot of shots, I think New Zealand probably takes that one.
A lot of outside shots. I think New Zealand are very similar to Tassie in the way they not as good and grindy, but very similar physically, defensively. So I think they will give – I'm picking New Zealand in this one because I think that defensively they're a better team. They can grind it out. I think Jackson Cartwright's done a phenomenal job the last couple of weeks offensively as well. Made some big shots. I think he's brewing with confidence. Clark's the X factor for me. I think depending on what his ankle's like, you know, his ankles, he was in a boot leading into that game and ended up playing. That's never a good thing. So he limped into that game, but he's had a week off now. So I'm interested to see if he comes back with some better form. They are at home, which maybe most people, I'd be interested to see what the market say, but most people probably give them the nod at home. But I just like New Zealand. They're a spirited team. They're well coached. They have the yellingest coach I've ever seen, pro. They have a guy named Modi Moe. He uses every decibel of his voice box. A guy does not, he gets after his players. He's not shy to get after them, yell at them, profanity, whatever it is. And they seem to respond. You know, I've heard rumors that there are a few from time to time, some players that tune him out and are rubbed the wrong way. But you know, give credit, it works for him because they respond to him and he's up and in there. I remember we played him with the Kings this preseason. We played him in a closed door preseason scrimmage and all you could hear was his voice the whole game, like yelling at refs, yelling at his players, abusing his players in timeouts. Just like, holy shit. So I know some players don't like it, but he's one of those coaches that, I don't know, maybe the players bond together even more because of that, and he does a good job with it and he's a pretty good coach. But they knocked out the Sydney Kings. They're done. As broken last week, we have released Coach Mood and wish him all the best in his future endeavors. But you know, we were disappointed with the season. I think a lot of people were. I think just an inconsistent year of ups and downs. You know, I think some of the players have to take some of the blame as well. There could have been some players on there that I don't think fully bought into what Mood was doing, which doesn't help his case neither. And as Pro knows, when these things go astray, you know, your coach is obviously the first line of fire, and unfortunately that's the way it's ended. But I will stress there are some players that definitely did not shape up to, you know, what we thought they would have. And it just didn't fit. We felt we had a very talented roster, but talent doesn't win you championships, and the talent just did not fit and mesh the way we thought it would. So we have a lot of work to do. Our roster, we have, you know, 5 contracted players for next season. Jalen Galloway is just signed with the Milwaukee Bucks, which is a big out for us on a 2-way. You know, there is a chance he does come back depending on if the Bucks keep him long term or not, but that's a tough one. And we're in the process of hopefully announcing a coach in the next couple of days. A lot of rumors going around, some right, some wrong. So we spent this whole last weekend, you know, obviously we moved late last week. We went straight to work on the weekend and, you know, conducted, you know, some interviews and reached out to some people. So we had to get on this immediately because free agency is around the corner. Free agency is here already. You can already re-sign your own guys. We can't afford to have this interview process string out for 2 or 3 weeks, and then we miss the boat on free agents that we want to look at. So we're gonna have it all done and something out within a day or two of this podcast. So you'll see all that. But yeah, busy week as far as all that goes. And like I said, you know, we wish Mood all the best going back to the NBA and the G League. Justin Tatum has signed a 3-year extension in Illawarra, so I think a very good move for them. He's done a fantastic job. Pro, they were last at one point this season. He's bounced them back into a top 4 finish, which is very, very impressive for a small market team. Ninnis has re-signed with Adelaide for 2 years. I think good decision for them. He seems to have done a pretty decent job of turning that place around. Humphreys has stayed in Adelaide for a big number rumored. So he signed a 3-year deal there. And just finally, just wanted to finish on NBL stuff. DJ Vasiljevic, I'm not sure what the deal is, but he just continues to throw stones at the old Sydney Kings. And I just want to go through this again for people that are not familiar with what happened to old DJ. But he, you know, I don't get why there's all these stones thrown. He's making comments on social media posts about ongoings that no one knows the half of what happened in Sydney. And this is a guy that's won 2 championship with us. We try to support him all through it. He was contracted for this season, this past season, with the Sydney Kings. We had him on the end of his 3-year deal on that deal. And he came to us and said at the end of our 2nd championship, hey, I've got an opportunity to go to the NBA on a 2-way or an exhibit 10 deal. with the Washington Wizards. And we said, well, you're contracted with us. Like, yeah, okay. And then we had some back and forth and we said, look, we're not one of those teams that tries to prevent guys from going to the NBA or following, you know, realizing their dream. That goes for both coaches, medical staff. We're always very supportive. Look, we'll let you out of your contract. Go ahead and chase your dream, young fella. All the best. DJ goes over there. Not sure if DJ didn't read the fine print or his agent didn't explain it properly, but an Exhibit 10 deal, I think they waive you, they waive you from the NBA team, put you in the G League, and then you get some call-ups during the season, right? I don't think he realized that. I think he felt like he was going to be an NBA rostered player. Once he was waived, packed his toys up and left on a plane. And basically, from what I understand, told the Wizards while he was on the plane. And they were like, what the fuck? Like, this Exhibit 10 deal. Like, we're waiving you to put you in the G League to bring you back up. So, hold on, the Wizards aren't too happy with the way the whole situation went down. So then you fast forward to we're in week 3, 4, 5. I can't remember the exact week of the NBL season. We've got games coming up. We get a call on a Thursday saying, from his DJ's agent saying he's coming back to the NBL. So we have a first right of refusal to bring him back on that deal that he forewent. That's the NBL rules, that deal we let him out of. That still stands if you want to keep DJ. We get told on a Thursday, you need to let us know today. And we're like, well, hang on a second. Ownership groups all over the world. You know, we had someone in the US. We had, I think Luke was in the US at the time. I was wherever. Paul, so we can't just get this call done straight away. Like, give us a couple of days. We'll let you know by next week. From what I understand, he was already in Adelaide training with the 36ers. That's a separate story. So we don't get a call, I think, till like Sunday or Monday morning. Someone from Adelaide called our ownership group on like the Friday. Can you release him? We said, look, we don't know what's going on yet. We might consider a buyout. If you want to offer a buyout, let's chat. They didn't offer anything. And then it gets to a point where we have to make a decision. So we meet Monday, I think, morning. And, you know, we've got our roster set because we're in week 3 or 4 of the season. So our salary and our budgets are all set. If we bring DJ in, we have to cut someone from our roster that's been playing. At that time, we're actually playing well. I think we're top, you know, second or third on the ladder. And we also have to eat the salary. On top of that, there'll be a tax portion of his salary because we'll be over the cap because we've budgeted our way, right? So we're like, fuck, we're negotiating this as an ownership group. And we're like, what do we do? Do we bring it back in the fold? Don't we? We ultimately go to the coach and say, do you want to roll with the roster you got, or do you want to try to make a move to the roster? He goes, look, we're playing well right now. I want to keep it as is. So we let DJ's representatives know, look, we're not going to bring you back because we don't have the cap space. We don't want to cut someone. You know, if you would have stayed in your contract in the off season like you were supposed to, no problem. You'd still be on our roster. That's it. And he went and signed with Adelaide. But I don't know why he's mad at the organization and throwing these kind of, you know, shots at passing. I don't understand it. I wish he'd air it because I'd love to hear it. And I'll let you know if it's the truth or not. I'm not with Sydney on the day-to-day, every single day with ownership, with coaching and the GM. But it just scratches my head as a frustration. This is a guy that is a celebrated player for our organization, that won 2 championships, and in those years with the 2 championships, struggled with role at times, frustrated with shot attempts, didn't have the greatest shooting year, the championship year. I know there were some frustrations with maybe he should get more shots or wasn't getting any spots, and still won a championship. So I just hope it ends. Sick of seeing it online and sick of seeing the leaks and the passive-aggressive leaks. If DJ has something to say, I just hope he comes out and says it. So I just thought I'd give some context around that people thought that we did, you know, DJ's come out and said we did him dirty or did him wrong. We there's not much we could do in our position there unless we burnt someone from our roster, Trent. But I don't know if you follow that too much, but it was just something I wanted to mention because it's just keeps popping up with certain journalists.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Like, I don't know, especially after he's just signed a deal, the fact that, you know, the Kings are still even being mentioned doesn't really make a lot of sense. So I don't know. I don't know too much about, obviously, what happened within the organisation. But, like, I think now for him, with him and Humphreys re-signing in Adelaide and them re-signing Ninnis, his focus should probably shift to, like, especially after the – you know, last 2 years Adelaide have had.
Pressure's on.
A lot of pressure, and it's like they're obviously telling Humphreys and him they're the guys, and it'd be about building that, rebuilding that culture in Adelaide, because obviously with the happenings of the three imports they had there, you know, I feel like the culture over the last few years in Adelaide has been real toxic and just not a great environment to play in, and I think some of the players would probably tell you that as well. So I think it's up to him, Ninnis and Humphreys, to really kind of create a culture and create an environment where guys want to play basketball, and then hopefully that results into wins, and then, you know, this all this chatter can just be forgotten about. But you're right in the sense that it doesn't make a lot of sense. You win two championships with an organization and, you know, this sort of stuff's been talked about.
After we let you out of your contract, that's a big thing. It's like we could have been the bad guy and just said, nah, man, like your contract would go the next year, but we let you go. And for Adelaide's sake now, you're no longer, you know, their run at the end of the season was commendable, but at the same time, they weren't really playing for much. They had a really rare chance of making the finals, right? It's easy to get up for those games and play spoiler. No, it really is.
Yeah, I agree.
Let's see that kind of form once it matters round one of next season. That's where the pressure's on. You're paying two guys. Humphrey's had a great year. DJ's supposed to be the face of that franchise. From what I hear, he's kind of dictating terms there with free agency and whatnot. Fantastic. I hope I see it, because it's easy to do it when the games don't matter. Like the win-loss for them didn't really matter. So that of course they can go in and beat a New Zealand, play spoiler. You know, you were knocked out of the finals essentially, mathematically, 8 weeks ago. Like, you know, so
another interesting thing as well is if he's complaining on a championship team that, you know, is poised, you know both those finals runs you guys were the best team in the league, and I don't think anyone would argue that. If you've got problems with winning and you got problems with, you know, being successful, then when times get tough, you're on a 3-4 game slip, 5 game slip, you know, you got a coach in there that he's probably not super familiar with. Like, how quick and how, you know, does he start pointing fingers at people and, you know, start shifting blame? Because if he was doing that when he was winning and has problems with winning, then it's going to be interesting to see him be the guy, because on the Kings, maybe third, fourth option.
Yeah.
So that pressure of being that shot taker, and like, are you going to be, you know, what Bryce did this season and, you know, take it all on and show up? Or are you going to start pointing the finger and blaming Scott, blaming ownership, blaming all, and start, you know, doing the same things as he's kind of exhibited with the Kings? So I don't know. I think this next season will be a very telling of DJ and like what his, you know, outlook of his career will be, because if he can't step into this kind of role and be that first or second option, I think then he's destined, like, to be successful and win championships, he's going to be a second, maybe third option guy for his career.
Yeah, and he can go. Like, he's a bucket. Like, when he gets in one of those moods where he's hot and feeling it, he's fantastic to watch. But, I mean, even with this Adelaide year, I think he was close to 20 a night at under 40% from the field for the season. So, you know, there is some improving there, but that's the kind of role that he's going to play. Is he your number one option? I don't think so. I think you still need a good import that can create. You know, he's not a creator for others. He's a gunner. You need those guys on your team, and he's, like I said, when he's hot. But I wish him all the best. I just hope the snipes stop, because there's no context to him, and he's feeding journalists and people that love the clickbait stuff, the gossipy stuff, but there's nothing's corroborated. It's all just innuendo, and I think he's just a little mad that we couldn't pick him up for that deal when we had no roster space. So all the best to him, and looking forward to seeing Adelaide next season. But yeah, I'll tip New Zealand tonight, much like yourself. I think they'll get the Chocolates versus Illawarra, and they'll be the ones facing Melbourne United Pro. So yeah, we'll give our predictions on socials for the NBL stuff. Obviously, we record every 2 weeks, so we'll probably miss a little bit of the semifinals. I might do a video or something leading up to those finals once they're confirmed, because we still don't know who the four seed is. So there's no point doing it for this podcast, but appreciate everyone tuning in for the NBL stuff. Pro, what do you have for fact or fake news?
Folks, after watching Wemby versus Chet, I think we've talked about it before, but do you still consider Chet a rookie? Or actually, we were just talking about, should we change that rule about if you hurt for that first year, you're not really a rookie? Do you consider him a rookie, fact or fake news?
Fact. I still consider him a rookie. I mean, if you haven't played, how many games did he play? Did he play any?
No.
Preseason, right? Summer League, wasn't it? Yeah. The injury. I think if you haven't played any.
But you had a year of being in the pros, though.
Yeah, but he's not playing though, man. I know. I think it helps him get a leg up, but I think it. Mm-hmm. Who was Donovan Mitchell and Ben Simmons, Blake right? Yeah, Donovan Mitchell.
Blake Griffin did it.
And Donovan Mitchell, Ben Simmons. It was like Donovan Mitchell, he was wearing the Not a Rookie shirts or some shit. Was that battle? I think it's tough, but I definitely think it gives you a leg up being around the routine and getting over that rookie wall sooner than most rookies. How much is it helping Chet though, bro? What, 20% maybe? 25% maybe?
Yeah, you're not playing, I agree, but...
I think he's still a rookie. If you get injured in the season, different story. I would say, nah, that counts as your rookie year. So if you play 5 games, get hurt, that's your rookie season. You don't get another one. But if you don't play a single game because you got hurt leading up, I think it's only fair to be a rookie because technically you haven't touched it before. So I would say fact that he's still a rookie.
That's short and sweet, Bogues, right? I was wondering, just, you know, a lot of people, like, I listen to a lot of people's views and I don't really have a view on it. I don't care if they consider him a rookie or not, but there's a lot of people talking about it. You know, a lot of the serious radio people talking about it, you know, like in both sides of the argument, you know, giving you a leg up, working with pro coaches and you know, workouts and things like that versus not.
Well, then what's the difference if a guy came from the NBL or Europe? They were working with pro coaches, right? Like.
Yeah, but they weren't playing against NBA players in practice. I guess that would be your counter argument to that. But okay. Yeah, look, you're never going to make everybody happy. Everybody's going to bitch about something. But
All right. Leading off that then, pro fact or fake news, will this be the first season in a number of seasons we see a co-rookie of the year? Because, I mean, Chet, Wemby's numbers are better than Chet, but Chet's team's number one. So, you know, do we see a co-rookie of the year?
I think everything's going towards a co-MB, a co, but I don't know, man. The whole Wemby thing is like the guy can't do anything wrong. Anything wrong. Like
besides his team record.
Yeah, besides team record. But like, man, every time everything. I mean, maybe because I watch every Spurs game and they're just, man, they just celebrate the guy every 2 seconds. But I mean, for good reason, the guy is having a ridiculous year, but I still say they're going to give it to him, even though it's pointing towards both. But you're right. Like, Chet's doing it on a team that's one of the tops in the West. And, yeah.
I wonder when the last time a number two – oh, it was Darko probably, right? Was Darko number two pick? It doesn't really count because he wasn't playing. I wonder when the last time a number two pick that started was on a number one seed team. That might be a first. We love our first pro, but that's – because usually you're a top five pick. You're going to a shitty team. The fact that you're starting on the number one team in the West is pretty impressive. I think it's co, in my opinion, because I think Wemby's numbers are better, but Chet's shooting numbers are better. We went through this a month or so ago. Chet's shooting numbers are much better. Wemby obviously eye-popping with steals and block shots and stats, but they're number one in the West, man. Like you got to get some sort of credit as a rookie that you're starting on the best team in the West. So I would do co I think they'll push towards co because – you can't hide from the fact, though, the season OKC's having and the one outlier and change they've had is Chet's healthy, you know? So, I'm all for co. All right, bro.
Yeah.
Appreciate it. See you in a couple of weeks.
Trent, have a good couple of weeks, my man.
Thanks, bro.
Anytime, brother.
Work on your left hand, bro. Wipe your ass, brush your teeth, all right? See you next
No doubt about it.
Later.
Hey, no, later.